Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and for 30 years, I have been both the CEO of Technology Partners and the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Welcome to the Something Extra podcast, where we dive deep into the essence of leadership through compelling stories and powerful insights. I'm Lisa Nichols, your host and CEO of Technology Partners. This year has been remarkable, filled with conversations that have inspired us to lead with courage, authenticity, and heart. From Jeremy Kubitschek's Daily Practices for Clarity, to Maggie Wilderotter's Wisdom on Building Authentic Relationships, to Frank DeAngelis' Moving Reflections on Resilience and Love, each episode has offered something extraordinary. Today, we're excited to bring you the best moments from our 2024 episodes. Sit back, relax, and join us as we celebrate the lessons and legacies of true leadership. Our first clip of the Best of 2024 Part 1 episode is Jeremy Kubitschek, co-founder of Giant and multi-time author and a keynote speaker. Love it. My wheels are spinning about 90 miles a minute here. But okay, so let me ask you a couple of questions. You're doing a whole lot. What would you say is the secret sauce to keeping your sanity?
I do this. There's two things I do every single day. I do in the morning. I did this morning. It was so powerful. I did a call-up session every morning. And I remind myself who I am and my identity. And so the call up this morning was actually kind of it was very spiritual this morning. Sometimes it's just more I tell myself who I am. But this morning it was so profound. And I was like, hey, remind me who I am today. And I just literally leaned in and heard him remind me to tell me who I was. Because identity is like you have to work on yourself every day. It's almost like evangelize yourself. The idea is, I am a liberator. I'm a freedom fighter. I'm a creator. I'm an encourager. That's who you are, Jeremy. Let's go. So I basically got myself ready by calling myself into the position and the mission I had today. That's number one. The end of the day, I do this thing every day at about 5:30. My watch will go off no matter where I'm at. If I'm usually driving, maybe it's 5:30 to 6:30. I'll do this right before dinner. I do an examine. And I just do a review of the day, and it kind of looks like this. What was I grateful for? Number one, who did I meet that I need to tell? Hey, awesome, good, thank you. Today was, you know, and there might be two or three people. Then I go, where was I off today? Where was I not at peace? And what I do is I catch my emotions so that they don't go on to the next day. And the idea is that I manage my emotions so that other people don't have to manage my emotions. And so I basically say, where was I off today? And an example would be like, why did I, like I woke up on the wrong side of the bed. What happened there? So then I analyzed, well, you stayed up too late. You watched a show that was like, you felt slimed. It was like violent and like, did you really need to do that before bed? No, that wasn't really helpful. You didn't end well, Jeremy. And so therefore you woke up obviously and you didn't do a call-up session and you were, so what are you going to do next time? Well, yeah, next time I'm going to read before I go to bed. I'm going to watch something that's encouraging. I'm going to do something. But I'm not gonna watch slime before I go to sleep anymore. It didn't help me. Didn't help me help others. So that was my like th that's an example that happened this last week. But that's what I do. So I catch these things, and then sometimes I catch them. They're like tendencies. Like, yep, you know, you overshare. You know, you that's a tendency of yours. When does it happen? When? And I kind of play detective on myself, and then I go, is it me or is it the other person? And most of the time, it's me. So then what I do is I get at peace and with myself, and I manage my emotions. And then by dinner, I'm free. I'm not thinking about stuff. I'm chill. Kelly and I may go on a walk, or we may, have a hot tub conversation, but I'm not having a lot of animosity because I've managed my emotions, where in the past those things would kind of build up and be the straw that breaks the camel's back kind of a thing.
The next clip is with Michelle Green, EVP and Chief Information Officer at Cardinal Health. I would just say to people, when you have those opportunities, as much as you can, say yes to those. And obviously, sometimes you do need to say no. Learning the power of no is really important too. But let's talk about this. So career-wise, you've had a great career. You worked for Sony Ericsson, which I think really took you to Sweden for a while.
It did. I lived in Sweden. And when you were speaking earlier about taking the opportunities, I think this is a perfect example of, I've shared this story with people before. Me and my mom, we are super close. So we'll talk on the phone in the mornings. Now we do a lot of texting, FaceTiming, whatever we need to do. But at the time, I would talk to my mom every morning, and the drive from my house to my office was about 7, 8 minutes every morning. We talk on the phone. And I remember getting off the phone with her saying, listen, I have got a, at the time, my leader's name was Des Black. I've got a conversation with my leader this morning. I'm not sure what's happening. He's just back from vacation and said he wants to meet. He wanted to meet to ask me about the opportunity to Sweden. So as soon as he asked, I was like, of course I will. And I called my mom back like 30, 45 minutes later. And I'm like, hey, I'm moving to Sweden. And she was like, what? I just spoke to you. Like, what happened in that short period? So that was one that I said yes to. And I recall people asking me, like, what are they going to pay you? How are they going to pay you? I was like, I don't know. But in the end, I'm feel confident they're not going to take any money away from me. So if I'm good with that, then let's just go for it, because this is a great opportunity. So the first time I lived in Sweden, I lived in Sweden for about 7, 8-ish months. And I was only supposed to be there for 6. And they extended me a little bit, and I came back to Raleigh, North Carolina at the time. And then I was back in Raleigh maybe about a year and a half, close to 2 years, and I got asked to go back. And I signed up for a year with the option to extend for a year, and I was in Sweden for 4 years. So again, I felt like the growth opportunity I had for Sweden was bigger than just professional. It was personal. It was very personal for me. I feel it helped me to become even more independent, more focused, and to just learn myself. It forces you to do a lot of internal work. It forces you to do a lot of self-work. When you're living on your own in a foreign country, you just have to figure things out. You can't always just pick up a phone and call a girlfriend or pick up a phone and call your mom. You got time difference to deal with. And I don't know. It really did help me just grow in a great way.
Next up is Donnie Campbell, a keynote speaker, math teacher, basketball coach, and an inspiration for the character Ted Lasso. Yeah, tell me this, because you and I kind of talked in a sidebar conversation. I think it might be really helpful for our listeners, because sports is such, youth sports is such a big thing, isn't it, Donnie? I mean, you had 3 girls of your own. They all played sports. And you told me, you said you really didn't get involved. What did... If we've got listeners out there that are parents of athletes, what kind of advice would you give them? And I know kind of what you did for your girls, but what would you say to them?
Number one, they better be having fun. If they're not enjoying it, then they shouldn't be. Don't force them to do it. I never forced my kids to do anything. If they did do it, they were going to finish it whether they liked it or not. You know, we talked about, finish. But yes. I think, number one, they've got to love it. And the reason why kids are getting out of, you know, I think the percentage is like 80, it's in the 80%, 87%, don't quote me on that, are getting out of activities, sports activities by the age of 13. So why are they getting out of it? They're getting it out of it for two reasons. Parents who are trying to live their life, their sports career through their kids. And number two, of coaches who really don't know how to teach, that really don't know the fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm seeing now from kids now, give an example of basketball players. And I watch a lot of games too. I still go to high school games and watch, and I watch college games. And kids now are more athletic than they've ever been, but their basketball IQ is not very good. They really don't understand how to play.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's totally different than what I believe in. I always wanted my kids to be fundamentally sound and to play as a team. And if your kids are on a team and they're enjoying what they're doing and they're learning so many lessons, and are they always going to be happy with the coach? Of course not. But it's not your responsibility as a parent to jump in and try to get your kid whatever, maybe it's more playing time. You need to have your son or daughter go talk to the coach, because this is not about you. It's about the kids. Kids yeah. haven't changed. Parents have changed.
Mm. And it's a good
to
point.
Me, I just want to stay out of it. I don't know what they're doing in practice. I don't want to know what they're doing in practice. I'm just going to go to the game. I remember my youngest daughter played soccer, and we were in a tournament in Iowa, and she was on a really good team. And she hardly, I think they played three games that weekend. And it was a little expensive. We had to get a hotel, you know, and all the stuff that goes into it for people that are doing traveling teams and stuff like that. I don't think my daughter played 4 minutes. So as we're driving home, she says to me, she says, "Dad, can I say talk to you?" I said, "Well, sure. What's going on?" She goes, I said, "What did you think about this week?" I said, "Sydney, it didn't matter if you played 4 minutes, 40 minutes or not play. I still love you. I'm proud of you." And so it was never about me, about her success on the soccer field or basketball floor. It was about what kind of kids they are. Mm-hmm. Are they learning lessons from what they're doing? Now everything's about, okay, can I get my daughter or son a college scholarship? And that's great. I think that's a great goal. But to me, it's, are they having fun? Are they learning? Are they learning fundamentals? Are they learning the right way to how to work with other people? All those things.
Next, we have Karen Cranenberg, CEO and owner of Polo & More and Managing Director for Care Caribbean. Well, I have one more question for you, and then we need to take a quick break. And I've got a lot more that I want to talk to you about. But okay. This one is really, I find this so fascinating that you've actually been to over 106 countries. And I think, you know, you've set up polo matches in a lot of those countries and,
yeah. You
know, you've done a lot of different things around the globe. But you kind of describe you as a global nomad.
Nomad. Yeah.
Yes. And so what I really would love to know from you, and then we'll dig into a lot more after the break, but how do you personally prepare to adapt to so many different cultures, you know, and environments? Because they're all different, are they not, Karen?
They are all different. You know, I always say to people that travel is an education in itself. So you're going there to learn from the people, to learn from the culture. And that's your takeaway. From it all when you go mm-hmm. there. So there's always that fascination, that excitement when you're going someplace and you're going someplace new, someplace that's different, you know? So it's different preparing, I would say, preparing for a trip like going to Everest for going to a trip like to Mali, which I went to Mali last year, which is very different. Mali is a country I've been wanting to go to for the last 12 years since really their problems. They've had a lot of problems with rebels and stuff like that in the last 12 years, and it's not really been that safe to go. And they had a little bit of a quiet patch where last year, and I said, I'm going to take this opportunity mm-hmm. to go here now, you know. I packed my bags and, you know, I made a... But the thing about it is I'm a planner as well, too. So I always make sure that, you know, for example, when I went to Mali, that I had somebody had recommended a guide that they had used. She's a journalist. It's a guide that she had used. So I made sure that, you know, I have those things all lined up before I go somewhere. I don't just show up and hope for the best, you know, on a wing and a prayer and hope for the best, because in some parts of the world, that's just downright dangerous. There are people that do that, but it's not smart, and I'm not one of those.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, you know, a lot of places that, of course, people, you know, they say here, they are genuinely dangerous. A lot of it is, there's a lot of propaganda behind it as well, too. So you kind of have to weigh the balance up of what the reality is and what's, you know, what's real and what's not, you know, and being in touch and having contacts on the ground makes a huge difference in terms when you're planning, you know, when you're planning a trip and you're planning to go somewhere. You know, if you, you know, some, you know, if you, there's some place you're planning to go and you, you contact, you have a guide, you have a local contact, and you say, hey, listen to that. And they said, listen, maybe it's not such a good time to come now. You know, it's not such a good time to come. So you don't necessarily are only, a lot of people, you know, they only look at what, you know, they only see the propaganda and they only look at, you know, all the warnings that they are to don't travel here, don't go there. But sometimes the reality on the ground is very different. It's only it's the locals that give you the real reality of what's happening.
Oh,
you know, for places that are, you know, I want to say sketchy, but, you know, that have their problems.
Yeah.
Have had their problems, you know. Right. So you can't blindly go and say, you know, oh, I'm going here with no preparation. That's not going to work.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
Now we have the EVP of Automation and Business Operations at MasterCard, Kimberly Martin. Kim, I know you're super passionate about this, but you know, when you started in tech, there was a real inequity in the number of females, you know, but MasterCard in particular has been really intentional about encouraging more young women. And another good friend of both mine and yours is Dana Lorberg. Yeah. And I think about what she did with Girls for Tech. She's retired now. And although I'm not sure she's really
quasi-retired.
I'm like, I think she's failing at retirement because she's so busy with other things, right? But yeah, Girls for Tech. But what else has MasterCard done? And, you know, what could you tell like our listeners that are in organizations that really are still trying to figure that out? You know, what kind of advice would you give them? What kind of ideas would you give them?
Well, what Dana did, which was, I think, innovative, is she said, look, if we wait until kids get in college, they've already made life choices by college. We need to meet girls when they're in middle school or before they get into middle school, because that's where they're deciding whether STEM is even interesting or not. And give them a picture of what STEM could be, because I think they see it in the movies and they see like the lonely programmer living in his mom's basement. And that is not what STEM is. And they don't even know that they probably do STEM activities every day, and they're not. And these are opening up a world of possibilities to them before they even start making those choices closer to high school. But once they go to school, then attracting them in your organization, we found that we were looking and we were recruiting and trying to make our job descriptions as, you know, gender appealing as possible. And we still weren't getting a lot of great candidates applying for our roles. And one of the things one of the recruiters said to me one day is, if you would let me open these up at a more junior level, I could get you a ton of candidates. And if you're willing to look for a non-traditional workforce, people that have done something different, but they're coming in as the entry level. So maybe they've had a career in something else. And I'm like, yes, of course we're open. And what we're finding is the entry level, you still have to grow the pyramid. Like they will grow, they'll come into your organization and they will still get promoted and they will grow. And it takes several years to start seeing that payoff. We're starting to see that payoff now in my organization. I think operations is one of the hardest places to hire a gender equal workforce, because people look at that and either one, they, you know, it's been attractive to, I think, not women for a very long time. We don't do a great job of making it look sexy. And then the hours, if you're, you know, a mom, you know, like I can't afford to get up at 2 a.m. I've got kids. I've got to get kids off to school. And so being able to balance that, say not every job needs somebody to be on call at 2 a.m. Not every job requires like deep depth and understanding like the Linux kernel. But there are plenty of roles out there, like analytical minds work great in this role. Being able to question stuff. I found that the best skill set are people that ask questions and then are willing to put a plan together once you have the answer to those questions. Those two things are, I think those are my strongest skills, and anybody could bring those in the table. It doesn't take a depth of technology knowledge to bring those. You just have to be able to ask the right questions and be willing to keep digging until you get, I think, to a final answer.
Christy Barker, VP and Chief Information Officer of Olin Corporation, is up next.
You know, can you, what are some of the most impactful technological advancements that you have implemented at Olin, and how have they really contributed to the business's success? Can you just talk about a few of those?
Well, I think there are so many levels, and you can't just, the change that we have put in place and the capability that we've built inside Olin spans everything from having information and data that you can trust to make decisions on. So what that means is we had to get to a common data model and definition of what it is that we're looking at. Understanding how we're measuring our business and, you know, get it so that everybody's in understands that same model. So it was basics that we had to put in place. We put in place all new manufacturing and engineering capability and standardized how we were doing that across all of our manufacturing assets around the world. So that when we're looking at an engineering drawing of a plant, it's coming out, we're doing this on a common way across all of our sites. Mm-hmm. Because then when you start doing this, then you have an engineer who now can span knowledge and expertise and can contribute towards solving a problem that can go beyond their one location. So, you know, how do we connect people and leverage what we're doing on a much broader scale than what we could do before? You know, we put in a whole new SAP, latest and greatest. In the chemical industry, we were one of the very first big global companies to take the jump into SAP S4 and do it in a way that allowed us to take advantage of many of the new technologies that were part of that whole portfolio from SAP. We had new infrastructure we had to put in place, new collaboration tools for how people were going to work every single day using, taking advantage of cloud. Now we're at a position, we're done with all that. We have a whole new, a whole new platform, a potpourri of solutions, common data model. So now we're focused on the next way we leverage all that investment we made. So we started our first artificial intelligence center of excellence within the company. We're talking with partners, about what that might look like and potential use cases that could make a real step change difference on helping people be more productive than they are today. We have our first governance committee that started as kind of our review board, but also making sure, because AI, and especially in this Gen AI field, it's growing or it's changing and evolving so quickly that, there's risks that we need to understand as well. And, what I need to make sure, and I take it as my job, is this is not a technology to replace people. People will always, a human needs to be in the loop at all times and make the judgment. But boy, if I can do some of my tactical work that I do so much faster, think about the hours I free up.
Our last episode for part one is Maggie Wilderotter,
former CEO for a Fortune 500 company, and now the chairman and CEO at Wildewater Vineyard. So, Maggie, what I'd love to talk to you about, sometimes you do get tapped on the shoulder. Sometimes you do get tapped on the shoulder, right? And you've tapped a lot of people on the shoulder. But I talk to a lot of leaders, Maggie, and oftentimes what they say is, no, I raise my hand. I raise my hand for the project that no one else wanted. So I have a question for you. How do you, because sometimes putting your story out there, letting people know what your skill sets are, can feel a little bit like self-promotion, and it can feel a little icky. So what would you say to people about that? I mean, how can you go about kind of promoting your brand, you know, within the organization without it feeling icky?
So, you know, look, I always believe that the best leaders are inside out and outside in. All right. So you're looking at things holistically. And I also believe that leaders need to build power bases, which is something that a lot of women don't want to do, or they're afraid to do it, or they think it's like icky to do or something. Mm-hmm. But positive power makes the world go round in the right way. Negative power makes it go the wrong way. And I believe in building power through networks. And so to me, networking was always working. It wasn't an extracurricular activity. It was integrated into everything that I did. And, you know, I would raise my hand for projects, for opportunities when I was young. And I always made a list every year of 15 people in business that I wanted to meet and spend some time with. And I would build into my schedule, you know, find out where they were, what things that they loved to do. And I would work my way into an opportunity to meet them, either through people that they knew and I knew, right? Or being at a place at the same time they were, was whether it's an event or whatever. Because networking is working. And I also believe that the best way to get to know people is to share a meal with them. Because when you sit down and you eat with someone, you're equals at a table. There's not somebody sitting behind a desk and you're sitting in front of it. There's not somebody who's, you know, got their badge on and they're in a position of power over you or greater than you. When you eat a meal, you're two people or four people, depending on who you're having a meal with, and you're all equals. You're all doing the same thing. And people lean back when they eat. Mm-hmm. And you get to know them again for who they are, not what they do. And so I ate my way around corporate America. and it was one, it was a big gift, right? Because I got to eat at many fabulous restaurants all over the world with very interesting people.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.